This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. A report from the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Inspector General describes dangerous overcrowding, poor food and hygiene, and prolonged stays of children at detention facilities along the Rio Grande Valley. Inspectors are calling for immediate steps to relieve the dangerous conditions. Meantime, Trump officials won't say how much taxpayers will have to pay for the president's 4th of July event. We're looking at the latest national news stories with Philip Bump. He's a national correspondent for The Washington Post. Good morning, Philip Bump.
Good morning.
And Chris Buckler is with us. He's a Washington correspondent for the BBC. Hello, Chris Buckler.
Good morning.
And I understand, Chris Buckler, that you were in Brownville, Texas, trying to get access to a facility there. Were you able to do that?
Yeah, we couldn't get into a facility. The facility from Brownsville in Texas is just about an hour's drive up the border in McAllen. But what I did do was speak to a doctor, a pediatrician, who had been inside that facility. She was there in the middle of June. Her name is Dr. Dolly Lucio Severe. And she was describing what she found inside the facility. She talked about real concerns for children who she felt had suffered trauma. She said that the lights were on 24 hours a day. She said they didn't have adequate access to food, to soap, to water. And she said from her point of view, this was doing damage to children. She actually said to me at one stage, if this was my child, as far as I was concerned, that child would have been broken.
And what you're describing that she told you has been largely backed up by this Inspector General report. It also backs up reports from attorneys who visited facilities in Clint, Texas, and the delegation of Democratic congressional lawmakers who visited a migrant detention facility near El Paso, Texas. Can you remind us what was in the report, Chris Buckler?
Yeah, I mean, the actual report itself talked about a ticking time bomb, about dangerous overcrowding, about security concerns. And of course, when you go to a place like Brownsville in Texas, you can just cross over into Mexico very, very easily. There's a border bridge there if you have the right documentation. And when you cross over into Matamoros, which is a sprawling city, you will find people sitting just the other side of the border, sitting in really blazing sun, incredibly hot conditions in the concrete, waiting to try to put in their asylum claim. People who have travelled huge distances, often from Central America, and they've come to basically try to claim refuge. And that can take months. They can sit there for months after months. And we've all seen the case of Oscar Alberto Martinez Ramirez, who drowned in the Rio Grande with his daughter. And I spoke to families who had been speaking to him and had been with them in the days just beforehand. And the truth is they become frustrated. They sometimes take risks, try to cross the river, try to get across into the US. And that's when they're apprehended. And there are huge numbers being apprehended, which is why we are seeing so many people and such overcrowding in these facilities. And frankly, if you talk to the authorities, they will admit that they are struggling to cope with these acute problems as they describe them. But inside those facilities, there is no doubt that there are people who are really being harmed by some of this. Dr. Dolly, for example, as she calls herself, she was talking about just particularly the very young, because she was in a facility where children were being processed, where children were being detained.
Yes.
And they're supposed to be there a maximum of about 72 hours. She said in some cases they had been there for 3 weeks.
And in this past week, Philip Bump, we've gotten more insight into how the adults are faring. Standing room only in cells for a week. I mean, how do you stay in standing room only conditions for a week?
I mean, it's a very fair question. I think one of the challenges that we have is that because there is this general lack of access to these facilities, it's hard to actually make these determinations. We've seen reports, including from the Congress members, that they're speak with folks. We're stymied by Border Patrol officials as well. And so it's hard to answer a lot of these questions simply because we don't really have much of a glimpse inside these facilities. That's one of the reasons this inspector report, which came out yesterday.
Philip Bump, we're having a little bit of trouble with your line. We'll try to get you on a better line in a moment. There was concern that was referenced in the Inspector General report, Chris Buckler, that the facilities are a security concern not just for the detainees, but also for the agents and staff members who are there. Besides just the unsanitary conditions, there's this fear that it's a ticking time bomb situation, that there's fear of a revolt. What are some of the ways that the adults are communicating that?
Yeah, I mean, you can get the distinct idea that there is a massive amount of frustration in there. And there are people who are becoming worn down, but also angry about the conditions. From the people that I've talked to who have been inside the facilities, you essentially get two types of people. You get people who are worn down by those days of despair, who frankly feel that they have to give in, that they can't do anymore. They've already had long journeys. And in many cases, they simply lose that flame of fight, as it was described to me. But there are others who get angry and start to become cross about the situation, start to become concerned to the point where potentially they could become violent. That's some of the concerns for the people. And the fact that you have so many people together in facilities that are not designed to house that number, that is obviously going to concern many of the agents who are inside those facilities, because they are dealing with people who are angry. And they are in huge numbers. And the fear is that they could turn violent at some stage, that they could maybe try to wreck the facility. And that is a genuine concern for those who are inside there and ultimately are trying to do a job where they are not being given the resources to actually address the problems that they're facing. Mm.
And Philip Bump, are you back with us?
I am.
So the Rio Grande Valley has seen a massive increase in the number of families that are crossing the border over the past year, which has contributed to this incredible volume. Customs and Border Protection has put the blame squarely on Congress, needing to act faster to appropriate the money that they need to be able to change conditions there. The money's out. The fear is that conditions won't fundamentally change, that in some ways these conditions are in part a way to deter migrants. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, those are the correctly defined sides of the coin, right? I mean, it's certainly the case that the administration and the government was caught off guard by this influx of people coming to the border. And there are a lot of causes for that that we don't necessarily need to get into. But the administration was not prepared to deal with the number of people who are crossing the border. And if you have a policy wherein people who cross the border illegally are generally detained, asylum seekers or not, then you have to find a place to detain them. And, you know, as was mentioned, the goal is to have them detained for no more than 72 hours. The Inspector General's report indicates a lot of them are being held for a lot longer than that in facilities that weren't designed to hold people over the long term. So that said, yes, it is also the case that an argument has been made that the Border Patrol also doesn't want to make this a welcoming experience for people, right? There is, you know, we saw this family separation policy last year that many members of the administration argued was meant as a deterrent. They didn't want people to think they could come to the border with their families, be welcomed into the United States. And it certainly is fair to ask whether the conditions that people are facing in these facilities are not only a function of the fact that resources don't necessarily exist for the scale that we're seeing, but also because they similarly don't want people to think, hey, I can just cross the border, I'll chill in a pleasant detention facility for a few weeks, and then I'll be released into the interior of the United States.
Now, as the inspectors are calling for immediate action, we have learned about this private Facebook group of Border Patrol agents that has cruel and racist posts about the migrants, misogynistic posts about members of Congress, particularly Congresswomen. Now, CBP, Customs and Border Protection officials, have tried to say this was the behavior of three individuals and that it should really be isolated to that. This group, this private group had 9,500 members. Do you buy that argument from CBP, Philip Bump, that this is really just a few bad actors?
Well, I mean, it is certainly the case that some of the most egregious posts came from a small handful of people. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. But, you know, one has to then ask, A,
why were they able to participate in this community that included a number of active members of the Border Patrol? But then secondarily, obviously, the question is, to what extent are these sorts of attitudes pervasive within the Border Patrol itself? And we heard reports from members of Congress who actually visited the facility that they felt some tension with the Border Patrol there, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, who suggested that she'd had some conflict with members of the Border Patrol, and she, of course, is one of the targets within this group. I think that's the broader question, is the extent to which some of these attitudes are pervasive, and this is a reflection of that. That, of course, is hard to answer.
We're talking with Philip Bump, national correspondent for The Washington Post, and Chris Buckler, Washington correspondent for the BBC. And with you, our listeners, we're discussing a report from the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Inspector General that describes dangerous overcrowding of families, children, and adults at detention facilities along the border, and about a Facebook group of Border Patrol agents that has been revealed by ProPublica. We'll also talk more about the president's plans for his 4th of July celebration, which is another big national story. But give us a call with your questions and comments. Our phone number is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, on Facebook, tweet us at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. So, Chris Buckler, President Trump, in and rather unexpected move, is now taking over a portion of the July 4th celebration. I guess what's unexpected is that it's another norm breaker for this president, but we're learning a little bit more about the cost of this, that the National Park Service is diverting nearly $2.5 million to be able to fund this. Do you know, or can you guess what proportion of the total cost of this event, $2.5 million, is?
I have no idea at this stage, and I have to say I've just been down there. I've just been down outside the Lincoln Memorial, and I'm taking a look at what has been set up. I did see the two tanks that have been much talked about, because of course this is a salute to America from Donald Trump's point of view. He's talking very much about this being a chance to celebrate American service and the American forces. And there are two, what I have to say, are not particularly large tanks, but nonetheless, two tanks ready to go in. They're planning for a flyover. They're planning, of course, for these huge fireworks display that I'm told is going to last more than half an hour. And I think it is going to be, from his point of view, and these are his words, it is going to be the show of a lifetime. From those point of view, then, you get the idea that this is going to cost a fair bit. Of course, the thing I'm really interested in is just how he's going to word this speech, because the White House are saying that it's not going to be a political address, but sometimes the president, and I'm sure you know this, goes off script. And whether or not he goes off script in front of this crowd is going to be one to watch very closely.
Because if he does go off script, Philip Bump, and even talks about, say, the candidates who are running trying to run against him in 2020, that this could be construed as a campaign event as opposed to a general public event?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've seen instances in the past in which President Trump is engaged in what are supposed to be official White House activities. He then has an aside disparaging a Senate candidate or a presidential candidate. And after the fact, then the Republican National Committee is supposed to come in and help compensate for part of the cost of the event, because it has become sort of this hybrid official event, campaign event. I think the stakes of him doing so this time would be much higher. I'm not even sure how that would be negotiated, because it's, you know, usually in the past, presidents are pretty assiduous about not crossing that line, which I don't know that President Trump will be. But, you know, this is in a very high profile, with a profile that's been raised by President Trump, national event, which is predicated on being nonpartisan. Quite frankly, I'd be surprised if he did cross that line. Of course, he surprised me before, but I'd be surprised if he crossed that line here, simply because it would be so, and this is already so politically risky for him, with reports, for example, that there have been tickets that were given to the Republican National Committee to be passed on to potential donors or past donors to attend the event. There are all these ways in which people are already looking at this with a great deal of scrutiny, and so I think he may be more cautious than he might otherwise be in this event.
And I had asked Chris Buckler earlier about the cost. I mean, my understanding is that the Trump administration has consistently refused to say how much taxpayers will have to pay for this. I mean, how can they do that?
I mean, that's sort of the standard question for the administration in a lot of ways, is how can they get away with not providing this information? I think the cost will come out. The Post actually reported that $2.5 million number. Trump this morning on Twitter made the argument that there wasn't going to be much cost if fireworks donated, that we already own the tanks and so on and so forth. But, of course, these tanks and personnel carriers that came up from Georgia, there's a cost incurred in that. There's a cost incurred in security. There's a cost incurred in doing the setup, which can be seen on the mall at this point in time. All of those numbers, I think, will come out eventually. And there is a level of irony to Trump dismissing the cost simply because he spent so much time railing against, say, the cost of the Mueller probe or the cost of having joint exercises with South Korea, that the cost of this is important simply because we need to match it against his past rhetoric on similar things.
Well, let's go to our listeners. Your questions on the parade or the event, I guess it is more than a parade, kind of a display of military hardware. And then any questions also about what you've learned about the border from our guests? I'll start with Barbara in San Francisco. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. I truly believe that the amount of money being spent for the embellishment of the basic 4th of July national celebration should be spent on taking care of the border problem, not aggrandizement of President Trump.
Well, Barbara, I don't think you're alone. We're getting some similar comments to that effect. Thanks for sharing that. I'll go next to Michael in San Jose. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Well, go ahead.
So my question is, and everybody keeps talking about money to take care of this migrant problem. They're saying that there's not enough money to take care of the basics. But each of those children by contract, and this is money going to for-profit prisons and the companies that run them, are getting $750 a month per child per facility. I live in the Bay Area. It's an expensive place to live, but for $750 a month, I can have a lot of my basics. And so why are we not discussing how much money these places are already receiving, why they're not providing with the money that they're given, and why are they asking for more? Because it seems like these places are really just trying to fleece the government as opposed to really take care of the migrant children, and the administration really doesn't care about that.
Well, Michael, thanks for your comment. And there certainly has been some unflattering reporting of some of these nonprofit or private organizations, Chris Buckler.
Yeah, and I think, though, that there is an acceptance on all sides that more money needs to be put into this. I think that's really why the Democrats made the decision to actually step back and stop pushing their bill and support the Republican bill just to get money freed up to get to the border. And obviously they kind of had to accept that some of that money therefore could be used for potentially border enforcement and security. But there was an acceptance there that more money is needed. And yes, there is cash for each person that's in there. But the truth is that the numbers keep on growing. And just expanding facilities and getting more help is something that has got to be the priority going forward. If you took a look at that report from the Department of Homeland Security, the watchdog yesterday, the response from the Department of Homeland Security said specifically that what they wanted to do was to build more facilities. They have more tents, they have more medical help. They are trying to get more in. And the priority is getting that funding there. There is a question, though, which you kind of raised there about just how people deal with that internally. And of course, that Facebook post by the border agents, by a limited number of border agents, has raised that question of just how some of them deal with the individual people. And that is something that's going to be raised going forward. And ultimately, you could ask the question there, are these resources being delivered in the best way? And that will be a focus, I suspect, for further reports.
Well, George and Hayward join us. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the Democrats have refused for months now to put any aid into these shelters for these migrants, claiming it was a manufactured crisis. And now they're doing an about face and blaming Trump for this problem. But When 100,000 migrants come a month, we're totally swamping the system. And the system that was designed for single men looking for work, and now we have families with children, and we're just overwhelmed.
Well, the Democrats have refused to put money into border facilities, Philip Bump, and they're doing an about-face now? Or is the story more complicated than that? I mean, George, just asking you about the policies of the Trump administration that exacerbated the situation that we're seeing at the border as well, while at the same time understanding that there has been an influx, a massive influx of migrants. Philip Bump, your response to George.
Yeah, it is certainly the case that it is politically tricky for Democrats, this issue, because, you know, we saw at the beginning of this year, the year started off with this government shutdown, which was predicated on whether or not we should fund the wall. There's a lot of energy built within the Democratic base about standing in opposition to that particular funding. That carried over as this crisis has evolved. That has carried over into people not wanting to give money to the administration, which would then be used for these detention centers, some of which are privately managed and owned, to prolong this process to give money to these facilities. There is opposition within the Democratic base, so it is a tricky path for Democratic elected officials to walk, and that has been the source of some of the fight in Washington. Now, that was resolved recently to the Senate's advantage, to the Republican-controlled Senate's advantage. There will be some funding for this. But it is the case that, of course, politics plays a role here, particularly on this issue, which is both very important to the Democratic base and very important to President Trump and the Republican base, because he has made this commitment on immigration since he got into the race in June 2015.
Well, Ben asks, at what point do you predict the international community will speak out, as they do for human rights violations in other countries, and demand transparency and accountability for the catastrophe at the border? Are any world leaders speaking out, or has it only been American Democratic lawmakers so far? Chris Buckler?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly you will have some people. I think UNICEF at times have kind of raised concerns, particularly, which is the UN's Children's Fund, which has raised concerns about just how some children particularly are treated at the border. It is a complicated picture, though, internationally as well, because what America is dealing with are ultimately the problems that are facing Central America. You could argue, and Mexico certainly, for example, has been arguing, that more money needs to go into the likes of El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, to try and address some of the problems that are the reason why people are fleeing. The problems like poverty, like violence, like corruption, like intimidation, which they say needs to be firmly addressed in those countries to stop the sheer numbers that are coming to the border. It is a complicated picture. And you could argue that it's not just up to America to sort it. It does need an international component. And solving the core problems there would perhaps help ease the pressure on the border.
Again, Chris Buckler, Washington correspondent for the BBC. Philip Bump, national correspondent for the Washington Post. Let's go next to Washington and Milpitas. Hi, Washington.
I got a question for the panel. What would the Republicans say if Barack Obama had held a 4th of July celebration complete with military displays and four-star generals next to him on the 4th of July? What would be the reaction?
Washington, thanks. To add to that, here's a listener who writes, President Trump's 4th of July parade is autocracy on full display and a distraction from the horrible press on these detention centers. Philip Bump, what are the Republicans saying about this 4th of July event? And well, Washington's point about what if Obama had tried this?
The reaction has been somewhat muted from supporters of the president. I mean, there has certainly been sort of an embrace of the idea that America should be celebrated. That's obviously something with which Republicans are fairly familiar. It's an argument that's made with some regularity. You know, had Obama done this, I think we probably would have seen what we expect from Republicans, which is outcry and dismissal and a disparagement of him as trying to act like a dictator. I mean, it's sort of remarkable just to go back and look at the ways in which President Trump actually talked about Barack Obama and things that he did, which he claimed were, you know, pseudo-dictatorial. This is politics, right? It is certainly the case that what Trump is doing is unusual, but I think it's fairly easy to predict how the reactions would have differed were Trump a Democrat than a Republican.
Well, but he's also taking $2.5 million from the National Park Service. I'm sure that's not going over well with a lot of folks who love their national parks, because my understanding was they just raised the entrance fees for the parks, and that's what some of this money is coming from. In terms of opposition or people speaking out against it, my understanding is that protesters, Philip Bump, have a permit to display the inflatable balloon of President Trump that depicts him as a baby?
They do, but my understanding is they were not permitted for helium, so it'll be ground level as opposed to being up in the air. I mean, yes, you're right. I mean, there certainly is inconsistency at play here among Republicans who have cried out about government spending and who now seem to be happily acceding to spending $2.5 million on this display, $2.5 million at least. But this is not an unfamiliar, I guess it's fair to say, hypocrisy over the course of the past 2.5 years. We have seen repeatedly that there is very little value to Republican elected officials in speaking out against President Trump overall because President Trump is so popular with Republicans. Members of the House, Republican members of the House, all of them are on the ballot next year. All of them, or a vast majority of them, are going to face primary challenges and don't want to have someone else come in and say, I would have stood more firmly with President Trump, and lose their primaries. There's not a lot of political value to Republicans in standing up to President Trump, especially on something which is meant to be a patriotic display. It's just it's a non-winning issue for them in this moment.
Well, let me see if I can get one last call from our listeners in here. Greg in San Mateo, join us.
Hi, I have a question. Do the people that are detained, do they have the option of returning back to their country at any time, or do they have to stay and get processed? And then also, it really kind of bothered me to hear some of our elected officials talking about how horrible the living conditions were when, you know, we have so many homeless people living in worse conditions than, you know, like Los Angeles opening 2 more parking lots for the 16,000 people that are living in their cars. I mean, I just feel like this is just so disconnected from, you know, Americans' reality.
Well, the option of returning to their country right away, I mean, part of the backlog is the processing, right, to have migrants be returned to their country, Chris Buckler?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if somebody wants to return to their country, then they can do. It is worth saying, though, that the reason that they've come to America is because they feel that they don't have a worthwhile life. They don't feel safe. There are reasons that they've left their country. And essentially, if they were to kind of say, listen, I'm going to go back, to give up that asylum claim. But, you know, maybe there are people that have been through that system and they feel very strongly that perhaps they don't want to do this anymore. Perhaps they do want to go home because of what they've been through. Mm. There's no doubt that it is difficult. And I think, you know, that question of homelessness, it is an issue for America, that it needs to be addressed. And, you know, the thing is we're talking about people here who ultimately need a better standard of life. And that's difficult for the government. And clearly the debate that we're seeing is about how that is best addressed.
Well, Chris Buckler with the BBC, thanks for joining us. And Philip Bump with The Washington Post, really appreciate you both being on today.
Thank you
to our listeners for their questions and comments. I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.